On this week's show, crossing over with the dorks. That's right, we're bringing the Free TO series to the crew with Jen Clark. All right, I'm excited. Trent, we're sitting down, we're crossing over. Dorks to the crew. This is going to be a fun one, man. Thanks for joining in today.
Absolutely, appreciate it. This be fun. Yeah, it's great to get to meet you, Jen, and can't wait to hear your story.
Yeah, it's great having Jen on. Jen, say hello to everybody listening in.
Hey, everybody. Introduce myself or...
No, not yet. We're going to leave them hanging for a little bit. Tell us where you're coming from, though, Jen.
General Sheet Metal out of Portland, Oregon.
Nice. So up in Portland, Oregon, we had the whole who's getting fire and smoke across the U.S. right now. And thankfully, Jen's not. Enough of the weather report. A little insider hint here. Trent Leinenbeck kind of came up with this idea on the dorks to do a free TO. What does Free TO mean to you, Trent? What is the series that we're doing over there on the dorks?
Free TO is really just a play on words to the idea of a CTO or a chief technology officer, which is a position that exists pretty frequently in the corporate world for many organizations. But in the world of contracting, it's not super common. Over the past decade, we've seen some people break through in this role, kind of become a reality. And I think just in the landscape of the world today, with tech being, you know, hireable personnel in the day-to-day operations of construction companies more and more, this has become a reality for a lot of people. And the true reality is this position kind of exists in every contractor. The title might not be there, but somebody's kind of doing it. And they're kind of doing it, which means they're probably not effectively doing it because they're not allowed to effectively do it. So we just want to kind of open the eyes of like what this role is and why it's important. And I think it's a way for more organizations to see that this is a position that can unlock things for their organizations. And think in the dork world that we've kind of, we didn't create this world, but we're shining a light on the construction dork world a little bit. I think there's a lot of people out there who are ready for this role to take it on and excel at it. So we call it the Free TO because we feel like there's people out there that are already ready for it. We're not here charging money for what's happening here. We just want to kind of shed light on the fact that this is something that we think organically can happen. And that's where the discussion kind of started.
Yeah. And we started a series on it. And Jen's going to really kind of fill in her perspective on it, and we're going to bounce between the two and do a little crew interview, but also kind of reference the Free TO series, because from our perspective, at least mine, it was giving back to the industry because we kind of created the dork idea and the dork light, and we wanted to say, hey, listen, actually this is strategic organizationally, and there's a lot of you out there floundering through the path and running into walls, and maybe we could share a lot of those insights and help break down some of those walls, help make it be a little bit more fluid path. So hopefully that's the case. We're going to bring Jen in here in a second. Before we do, though, you got to check out the Construction Dorks if you want to learn more about the Free TO. So just go to constructiondorks.com. That's right. We own constructiondorks.com. You can hear more about our podcast there. And then check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/@thecontechcrew.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@theconTechCrew.com to learn more.
All right, we're here. Jen Clark, let's sit down and talk a little bit more about you and let our guests kind of learn a little bit more about you. So how did you get to where you are today and kind of where are you today?
Currently today, I'm working for General Sheet Metal. We're a mid-size mechanical contractor out of Portland, Oregon. Been around for almost 100 years doing mechanical, industrial, HVAC, architectural sheet metal. And I have kind of a weird road getting to this point. going back in time, I originally studied civil engineering in college, thinking that I was going to go be an engineer and, you know, design buildings or bridges or whatever, concrete. And I wasn't really sure if that's the path I wanted to go down. I was more interested in kind of getting more involved in the actual construction side of things. And then I took kind of a hard right turn and went into a software support company for 3.5 years, working on the operations side, setting up training classes on like Microsoft products, Outlook, Excel, that kind of thing, just kind of teaching end users how to use the software that they have. So I wasn't the trainer. I was more of an operational person, putting it all together, auditing things, watching webinars, building agendas for that kind of stuff. And then I was doing that in Philadelphia and decided I don't want to live in Philly anymore. No offense to Philly. Still love Philly. Go back all the time. But I just wanted to try something new. So I quit my job, did a big cross-country road trip, traveled all over the U.S. and decided that I really loved the Northwest. So I moved out to Portland. That was almost 8 years ago at this point. And soon thereafter, I started working at General Sheet Metal. I heard that they were looking for project managers. I actually started as a project engineer on our architectural side. So I was really just in the field kind of helping run jobs. I worked on a bunch of large projects, you know, multi-million dollar relative high rises. It's Portland. We don't get super big buildings, but pretty large architectural sheet metal projects, all the cladding, facade, roofing, all that kind of good stuff. So getting to work really close to the foreman, getting to see the crews in action, getting to walk around the job sites, attend meetings, work with the GCs and deal with RFIs, submittals, all the kind of back-end paperwork side of things. I ran a few large jobs myself as a project manager before about 3 years ago, going to our president at the time and saying, hey, I see this gap in our company that I think I could fill, really focusing in on technology. I had been building a lot of different like apps and tools, spreadsheets, smart sheet workflows, kind of whatever I can get my hands on. I was building funky creative trackers to try to make running projects in the field easier and to be more effective, catch things, track change orders, track productivity. And I was just kind of building all these crazy things from scratch. And I wanted to be able to focus more on that, build things that were more scalable, sustainable, not, you know, so kind of chaotic and hands-on. And luckily, our president was like, hey, yeah, I think you could do it. Let's change your role and figure out how this all fits. So that was almost 3 years ago at this point. My current role is project integration manager, which we kind of came up with just to fit somewhat what I was doing at the time. But really, I've been focusing my time on building low-code apps. That's what I do a lot of the time. So I've built a CRM tool. I've built a project management tool, tracking RFIs, submittals, change orders, all that kind of stuff. I tie into our ERP system so we can pull accounting data, you know, job costs, purchase orders, all that kind of stuff up into a cloud system because we have an older ERP that's still not cloud-based. So trying to kind of, rather than having all these crazy workarounds, building something a little bit more sustainable to push that stuff up into the cloud and make it accessible. Yeah, I've built a lot of things in there. And then as I've just grown in my role, I've started to touch different areas of the business. I'm involved with pretty much every department that we have, finance operations, logistics, the shop. Anytime we want to roll out a new software platform or integrate something into our current tech stack, just trying to keep a handle on that. I technically manage our IT manager, so we work really closely together, trying to tie IT and operational technology just to be cohesive. And yeah, it works really well so far.
Let's put a pin in that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a few pins we got to drop in here along the way. Let's take you all the way back. So, I mean, you had the civil engineering, so you kind of understood, you know, what a construction site and construction project was like, but really hadn't done any of that work, pivoted. And then we're still able, General Sheet Metal is still able to see, like, you can come on here and use that PM role. I don't think that's that's commonly misunderstood because we see ourselves as snowflakes and we look for people with construction management degrees or et cetera. And you, while you had a general understanding of it, pretty green, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Seems to have translated, right?
Yeah, it's worked out well for me. I think a lot of it, my background, I appreciate my engineering degree and like what I learned in school just because of the problem solving nature of it. And we learned some construction management topics, but college also seems like forever ago. So I think it's more of like a way of thinking and kind of attacking problems and trying to figure my way through things. And I think that has translated to focusing more on the technology side of things where I'm building stuff. I was in the field tracking projects and I loved being on job sites, but I couldn't build the building. I'm not a tradesperson. So now I get to actually build things, albeit digital things, which I find really gratifying, and just working through those problems and trying to find better ways to do stuff.
Yeah, those things connect really well, I think. I mean, I think the aptitude for understanding problems and getting dirty and figuring it out and experiencing it, then it allows you the ability to build something worthwhile, right? Like that's sort of those two pieces. But I wanted to open that up because part of the FreeTO series is understanding that we are snowflakes in some respects in construction, and there are certainly things that you have to learn when you come over, but we're not so snowflakey that we can't go out and get really talented people that have these skill sets and put them to use right away and let them blossom where they want to go, right? The pin in that is you started as operations. You went in here as operations, but they saw your ability to grow and grow into another spot. And that's just something I think, Trent, maybe you can jump in here, but I think sometimes we're like, we try to hammer those people into a career path instead of really allowing them to flourish. And we've heard that quite a few times on the other side of the show. And sometimes that ends in people leaving, right? And thankfully you didn't. So go ahead, Trent.
I think it happens because it's generally somebody's like secondary or tertiary task a lot of times. And we see it pretty common in contracting that it's somebody in virtual design or somebody who's managing something else kind of gets the responsibility to handle some of those things. And I think what's been successful from what I'm hearing, Jen, for you is the initial task was kind of being, I think in the software world, we call it like enablement. Like it's you were somebody who was able to come in and be an enabler in some ways, where it's like you were able to do things that enabled these different areas of the business to kind of work together or like tie them together. And I think that enablement role is like the beginning of what we talk about in this like FreeTO, CTO world, right? That's like, it seems like a logical step.
It made a lot of sense to me, but I think that the biggest thing was, I think the biggest attribute that I had that kind of got me into this current role was that I like to figure out how things work. So even while I was a project engineer in the field and working on individual jobs, I wanted to know how to get stuff out of our accounting system. I wanted to understand how we were submitting shop orders. I wanted to understand how we're tracking, you know, logistics and deliveries and will call items and purchase orders. So I really kind of picked apart all of our systems as kind of my part-time job for a bit, because I wanted to understand it and figure out ways to make it better for me and my immediate team. And then when it kind of translated into that new role, I could go sit in the department meetings for all these various stakeholders and talk the talk in a way most people can't really cross-functionally do. So I think I was really lucky to kind of have that opportunity and to have the access that I had and the support and the people that I could ask questions of. But I do think curiosity and kind of that desire to understand how it all works was the biggest thing that played into how I was able to kind of pivot roles from field focus on jobs to, okay, look at the business as, you know, a big problem that I had to kind of unravel and figure out how to smooth out.
Yeah. And the big underpinning there too was you ran large work at times. You did the RFIs, you did the submittals. So you did the work. And I want the people listening in the FreeTO, we're always talking about like what you have to do fundamentally to earn that stripe to grow. And there's a fear of saying that, but you have to earn the stripe. You have to be able to speak that language. You have to understand the importance of those things. You can't skip over the fundamentals. So you had, you were off your side of your desk, probably working a lot of hours doing some of that while still delivering. And this is where I want to jump into so you get project integration manager, right? Which I don't know where you guys got that title from. I don't know if it's a title exists.
I've heard that one before. Look,
It's more of like an IT, or like a software rollout kind of thing. It's not a construction thing.
I think they had you doing exactly what you needed to be doing, but maybe the title wasn't really fitting to the,
I'm not even judging it.
We had a big long list of brainstorming ideas trying to find something that fit well enough.
Well, and that's sort of the enlightening part of the FreeTO series is like, we kind of have to define some of that in order to create some lanes for people to come up and go through things and find roles. Like, again, to your leadership, like, kudos for sitting down and allowing you to brainstorm and come up with whatever it was that works. And so you got it, right? And so you jump in and you start working on the low-code apps. Talk a little bit about that experience and just kind of looking back on it. What were some of the things you did right? And maybe, like, what can you tell people listening? Like, don't do
that. Sure. So looking back on it, it feels like a really long time ago, but I was just really excited to be able to have access to, you know, software tools that I could kind of build what I wanted and make it work the way that I wanted it to work. I was really tired of trying to use all these off-the-shelf project management platforms that were really hard to keep up to date or tedious or didn't play nice with other systems. We had a challenge kind of integrating our ERP with a lot of other things. So I just wanted the freedom to do what I thought was best. Of course, that comes along with, like, there's so many things you could do and so many ways you could do it. And I think I really just kind of jumped in feet first. And I don't regret that, because I think you kind of just have to start somewhere and get practice and get better at building things. Software is not, like, software development is not construction project management. It's not a construction job. It's iterative and it changes over time. And you have to be willing to test things out and kick the tires and go back and change it. And that was just a very different prospect than what I was used to doing as a project manager. But yeah, I think in terms of kind of lessons learned, it's great to get feedback, but don't just kind of blanket ask everyone for feedback. Find those key like super users or, you know, a couple smaller committees and try to filter the feedback to just a couple people. I think I found myself in situations where it's like, okay, all the project managers, what do you want? And that doesn't work. So I've gotten better at that as time has gone on. But I mean, so much of technology and implementation and change management is just getting stakeholders on board, getting people comfortable, making them feel like their voice is getting heard and that they have some say in what it is. So I'm still to this day learning how to balance, you know, getting people to feel like they're part of the process without having too many people involved in the process. And that's just a ever learning experience.
There's actually a statistical, there's an equation you can look at for that one. And I did not know this. But
I think, did you just present on this at a webinar or something?
I did just, well, it okay, wasn't me, yeah. But it was Chad Pearson from Plexus who presented on, and so you'll have to go over, and if it's not on the SMACNA website, if you're not a SMACNA member and you can't see it, then let me know. But there is this like 3-to-3-to-3 ratio where you get past a certain point, I think it's 9 people, there's like infinite number of things they want. So it's not a thing. It's not about the people. It's literally about the math equation that it's just too many outcomes and probability. So you stumbled on something. I had no idea until like a week or two ago that was a thing. So I feel you. That's a great learning experience, because most of us in the business want to be inclusive of everyone, right? And in the way of making sure we understand and making sure you're heard and making sure you have buy-in. And that's where, you know, and we're going to be doing another one of those SMACNA ones, and I'll be teaching on how, when you go out and do that, you also turn those folks into your marketing people. Mm-hmm. So they go out and ask their people, they go out and explore, like, what's killing you over a coffee, over the water cooler. And so that they're marketing that, hey, we are getting your input, but we can only get so much input. So that's a powerful piece to give people.
Jen, I'm curious, how do you validate the opinions, I guess? What's an internal mechanism that you use when you're kind of collecting problems or doing that at the company? Like,
a lot of it is really, I mean, I have a collection of feedback. I try to get people to use a feedback form to organize it. Of course, they forget and they just come talk to me or shoot me an email or whatever. But just trying to kind of put all of the ideas of, like, hey, this would be a really cool thing to implement at some point, into one place. And then depending on what it is, I'll lean on different teams to kind of go through it with me and brainstorm. So I lean really heavily on our IT manager, because a lot of times we're kind of going back and forth. If it has anything to do with like an integration, we tag team it. So I lean on him heavily to make sure that we're going the same direction, that it makes sure that it's a good idea. But I'm fortunate because I'm involved in all these different departments. Like, I can go to the operations team meeting and say, hey, operations team, this is what I'm thinking. Are you cool with it? Any other thoughts? Hey, finance team, I'm going to do something that affects how we're accounting for something. Are you cool with that? So I try to really take in all of the ideas I can, but then kind of filter it into smaller groups before I have that deeper conversation.
So is that the play then? Like, I guess, involving the leadership of the other teams to let them kind of choose what opinions make it to you? Or, I mean...
Well, we're still a small enough company that it's not too many opinions most of the time.
Yeah.
But I think you can't do web or app development as like a 5-person team. It's kind of somebody's building it. Just got to make sure that it's getting verified and you're keeping the lines of communication open. But yeah, I'm still probably getting in more ideas than I should. And it's just a matter of kind of prioritizing and making sure that every couple of weeks I'm looking at my to-do list and, okay, these are the 3 things I really need to focus on. These other things, great down the road, but not getting in over my skis in terms of what's a realistic timeline. And I think going into developing apps as somebody who was not a software developer, getting used to, you know, development and launch timelines and kind of formalizing that process for my own sanity has been just a work in progress. So I've gotten better at knowing how long it's really going to take me to do something. And it's always a lot longer than I initially thought it was going to.
Yeah.
It always is. Yeah.
Yeah. Always.
In a true like CTO function though, I mean, are you at the point now where you have the ability with like when these things come in and it's like, there's gotta be some kind of decision point where it's like, if yes, then this, if no, then this, like, are you able to weigh like what software options are out there currently or do, I mean, so there's obviously problems to solve. Is it like the first actionable item on your end is like, well, is there something solving this problem today? Should we research that and then kind of figure out if that's the right answer or not before we look internally? Or, I mean, can we talk a little bit about the process there?
Sure. So when it comes to kind of new softwares or new challenges that come up, I think I tend to lean on, we have this really robust like custom app that we've already been building. So is it something that's an easy fix within that because we already have all of our information, databases, all that attached to it? So if I can solve it easily in an app, that tends to be what I lean into doing. That being said, there are times where an off-the-shelf software is going to make a lot more sense. For instance, like Shop Fabrication, we recently moved to using Stratus, or we're still in the process of implementing it. I'm not going to build Stratus myself. That's not going to happen. So I do try to kind of evaluate what is the issue. I'm try to stay really familiar with what is out there on the market. I mean, I go to conferences, I go to MEP Innovation every year. I'm always walking around all the trade shows, talking to the vendors, even if I have no real intention of buying any of it anytime soon, just kind of knowing what's out there and comparing it to what I've built myself internally as well.
Well, it helps you decide, right? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. It's a balancing process, getting everything down on paper of what exactly we're looking for. Is it something that we can build? Is it worth the cost to build it internally? Or is there something better out there on the market? And then how does it play into our tech stack? So I'm not technically, you know, a CTO at the moment, but I am really trying to focus on building out a list of like all the softwares that we use, what they connect to, who's in charge of them, what they cost, so that every time one of these issues comes up, I could say, okay, currently we're using this. It costs X amount per month, per year, per user. Here's another option. Is it worth the time and effort and energy to switch? Is it a better quality product? And just weighing out those options. But it's still kind of early stages of me getting my arms around all that kind of stuff. Almost there with like a full list of all the...
Yeah, that's awesome.
Almost there with the full tech list. But it's tough to get all of that wrangled from kind of smaller company, everyone's doing their own thing, shadow IT, all that kind of stuff into, okay, if you want to look into something new, please talk to Jen before you just go out and buy something.
Yeah.
Because we might already have it.
I love this because you came from shadow IT. You know, being an IT person by trade, you were my shadow IT out there, building apps, Excel, doing whatever, poking around. So, you know, we can't fully shade them for shadow IT.
And IT works for her, right? So,
well, that's what I wanted to bring back to is, so you're not a CTO yet. You're still project integration manager. But we're starting to see the formation of a structure there because you said IT now reports to you, but you also work pretty hand in hand. So explain how that kind of came about and what that sort of looks like right now.
It was almost happenstance in a way. So I was in my role for about a year and a half and chugging along, doing my thing, building stuff. And our IT used to report into finance, so our CFO. And he just had a conversation with me saying, hey, this might make more sense under you. Are you okay with it? And I said, yeah, sure, absolutely.
Yes, please. Yes, please. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I have the bandwidth, and I think it'll make a lot more sense. And I think it's been really a really great experience for both my IT manager and myself, because we collaborate really well, really well. We're working on the same kind of things. We think in a similar way. So even though he has his priorities and I have mine, being on the same page and feeling like we have a team goes a long way, because we were both a little bit on our own island before that. And then down the road, I would love to hire a couple more technology-focused people to really kind of build out that team, work more closely with VDC, all of that, but just trying to build out a support network for myself as well as, you know, IT.
Well, you started with the great foundation, right? Because we've had this talk on the FreeTO series quite a bit. As the IT person and as the, you know, the person that wears that hack here on the show, it's really important to have a good synergy. And, you know, I was given the thumbs down. It's not that I dislike my CFOs out there. I love you guys, but and women and whoever out there that does the CFO job and counts the beans, but you are the office of no. And IT just gets killed in there. And so it's really powerful to switch underneath someone who thinks very similarly, wants to collaborate, has a respect for, you know, what the IT world does, but also, you know, brings a whole new perspective where a lot of that IT framework is underutilized. And by you using Power Apps, by you integrating with things, by you building things, you're driving ROI back on that infrastructure. And everybody in IT, in my opinion, likes that when it starts to happen. So this is really cool because you're building the building blocks. And, you know, I hope we're giving General Sheet Metal an idea that there is a path that if you're going to hire those people and your IT manager is going to hire people, because as General Sheet Metal grows, that's how it happens. Somebody has to ascend to that seat. So hopefully, you know, there are building blocks for you to go down that route to reach it. And I'm interested, as you guys came together, sounds like you two came together really well, but what were some of the maybe headaches that you can give people a heads up? What are some of the resistance you might get to creating this and sort of, you know, you just said, like, I got to handle shadow IT a little bit and I got to handle those things. So what are some of the things you can tell people to watch out for?
Yeah, I think the big thing, I mean, for me, one of the challenges has been just the learning curve, right? So I come from, you know, engineering fields, not even field, engineering, then like project management side of things. So trying to learn enough IT to talk the talk, trying to learn enough cybersecurity to think properly about risk management. Right now, I'm in the boat of trying to learn enough about VDC to help roll out Stratus and get more value out of all of our BIM data. So it's just a lot of learning and just knowing where, okay, it's not my show. I just need to know enough to kind of talk about it and keep an eye on things. I don't need to be in the weeds as much. It's hard for me because I want to get in the weeds and I want to get in there and play around with it. I think for me with IT in particular, it's just we come at problems with a different perspective. So there's certain tools that, you know, IT is used to using to solve problems, and I have my own set of tools. And now we have to come together to either pick one or have them play nicely. And that's just been, it's always a balancing act, figuring out what's going to be, make the most sense and be most user-friendly for our end users. So it's a lot of kind of, do we want to do this in Microsoft? Do we want to do this in QuickBase, which is the low-code tool that I tend to use? Do I want to do it in something totally different? And balancing things that IT used to just kind of go for and build this workaround because that was the only option that they had. Well, now there's better options out there and vice versa. It's not all me fixing everything with this one tool. It's a whole suite of tools that we have to figure out the best way to make it all work together. So I think just kind of balancing it and knowing that you might not have the answer and leaning on your peers to find those other opportunities out there.
Well, that's awesome. And that's a lot of powerful information for people to understand, because that balancing act of giving up some or understanding and also the ability to walk into that room and know, hey, I don't know enough about this, so I've got to learn and I've got to listen. Too many people in a CTO role or in an IT leadership role or in a just, you know, a role of leading technology feel like they have to be the smartest person in the room. And you rarely are. And they can smell it. They catch you in a second. And I don't think people really understand that as much. and how hard that can be for someone in your role, right? You're an expert in what you do, but you're not, and you can't be an expert in the entire operations.
Yeah, nobody can be the expert of everything, but I like to think of my role more than anything as the translator. I could talk tech, I could talk finance, I could talk operations, I can translate it for other groups, but it's just connecting those dots in a way that can be hard if you're, I have an interesting perspective on the business that I don't think most people have. And I'm fortunate to have that opportunity.
Well, as a tech leader, you have what you hope is the smartest people at your disposal and the smartest tech at your disposal. So step one is understanding what do you have resource-wise, personnel and tech. You talk about you have, you know, internal tech, hired tech, you have internal people, hired people, things like that. So understanding that landscape lets you make the decisions, right? I mean, when there's a problem that hits your doorstep, you think, who personnel-wise and tech-wise do I have internally? Can we solve this internally? What is there externally, right? I mean, these are all decisions that you, that as a tech leader that you have to make, and you start to kind of understand what you have and what's out there in the world allows you to make the best decisions.
Yeah, I'm going to plug our own episode on the dorks. We did the human API. That's what we call folks like you in the world, is the human API, because you can translate all the different languages coming from all the different places and articulate them into solutions and why you're doing things and why you might want to make changes. So we need those human APIs because, honestly, especially with the capabilities of technology growing and growing so quickly, the ability to articulate that at the speed we need is, and having people like you in that position is really powerful. Because you got to speak a bunch of different languages, right? You got to speak fabrication shop. You got to speak BIM and BDC. You got to speak finance. You got to speak business. So, you know, it's a cool role. I'm wondering what the future holds for Jen and what you're kind of excited about in opportunities and where maybe others can learn from you on where you're thinking about taking General Sheet Metal and sort of your shops and the way things are going.
So for me, kind of near term future is really focusing on our fabrication shop. We have a really awesome fabrication team. They kick butt. They make a lot of money. They do a really great job, but just trying to digitize that and make it a little bit more modernized, how we're tracking our orders, the kind of information that we have. So that's been a big focus for me currently. And that's involving a lot of learning about VDC and BIM and Revit and CAD and all of that fun stuff. And then getting to work with different teams that I haven't gotten to work with as much before. So working with our BIM people, our detailers, some of our shop managers that I haven't interacted with as closely since I've been more focused on the project management and finance side of things. So that's been really eye-opening and given me a great opportunity to focus on a different side of the business. And then kind of beyond, you know, modernizing our fabrication, kind of tracking and KPIs and all of that, just continuing to bring the company forward. I know AI is such a buzzword, but, you know, where do we want to implement that in terms of workflows? What do we want to purchase for that versus, you know, add-ons with current software that we use? And just trying to organize data. Like, we don't have an internal data analyst. I do a little bit of that, but it's, you know, one of 5 different jobs that I have at the moment. So trying to find like the bandwidth and the assistance and the tools to more effectively utilize all the information that we're gathering. And I mean, this is construction tech. We all deal with so much data that we've collected over the past, you know, 10, 20, 30 years. And like, what the heck are you doing with it? So a lot of times it's the simplest solutions. Like one example is we have a job closeout form/meeting. So when you wrap up a job, you fill out this form, you talk about lessons learned, but it's a PDF. So putting that into a digital format so that we have a database of, hey, here's all of our closed jobs. And I could look at, for this general contractor, how have we performed for this size job or this scope of work? How have we done? So if I'm an estimator and it's 6 months from now and I want to go look back and say, GCX, what's been our experience with them the past 3 years? Are there lessons learned, scope gaps we tend to find, contract issues that we run into, and have that all be searchable and not just a PDF in a folder somewhere? So they're not always really high-tech solutions. It's kind of connecting the dots between different processes across the company. So a lot of just like workflow cleanup and then trying to get myself a little more out of the weeds of building brand new things and focusing more on, okay, holistically, what is our current tech stack? Where are we going? What's our technology strategy over the next 5, 10 years? when are we going to finally migrate to a more modern ERP? That's going to be a big one. So just trying to think ahead and be more strategic and a little bit less in the day-to-day, but, you know, take it one day at a time.
Now I know why you were listening into that webinar. That webinar series, folks, for listening, is a 5-part or 4-part series with SMACNA on ERPs and when you're ready and how you go through that process, because it's not easy. I have one, and then I know Trent, you're going to have a question there, but I'm interested in sort of from your business perspective, what was the impetus and what do you think is driving the digitization and the changes in the workflow of the shop? Like you said, they're fantastic and they're pumping it out and they're making money. How did you convince the org, or how did they convince you that you needed to do this? Because I think that's a critical component to a lot of people in the same place as you are right now.
Yeah, I think the whole management team has kind of been on board with digitizing more of the shop workflows for a while. I think the biggest struggle was just not having the resources to do it. So our shop managers are really great at fabrication. They know how to build things effectively and well with good quality assurance. And we have a lot of outside customers that like to work with us, but they're not technology change managers. They're not software developers. So having somebody in my role who can really kind of focus on it and guide it, like I'm not doing every part of the setup, but just keeping an eye on it and making sure that it's moving forward, being able to suggest, hey, here are several options. This is the one that I would go with, but these are, you know, the pros and cons of each, and being able to lay that out. I think we had made efforts in the past to kind of change how we do time cards or change how we track things, but there just wasn't anybody leading the charge on it. And so being able to just focus on it and have me in that seat pushing it along, I think it's gone a long way. But everyone's been on board and wanting to do it, just putting the resources to do it.
Oh, good in that glue. Trent, any last questions?
This has been a great chat. And like I caught a little bit of what you said earlier. You've already kind of have a roadmap like for what you're focusing on. So I'm just curious, has this roadmap kind of been communicated and like formulated alongside of leadership at your company, or is this just kind of like an internal roadmap that you have, or what's the, it's great to hear that. It seems like there's a plan for you and what you're doing in the company. But like, talk a little bit about like what built that roadmap for you.
Yeah. I mean, the roadmap for me really has been something that's come out of just my experience the past couple of years, getting more involved in the technology part of the industry. I've been really fortunate to get involved more with SMACNA on the construction technology committee. So getting to talk to Chet Travis from the crew, as well as, you know, a bunch of other really smart people on that committee about what their career journeys have been, what they've been focusing on, what like kind of how they're seeing the industry right now, has given me a lot of kind of focus and ideas and inspirations. Going to MEP Innovation has kind of shown me what else is out there. So a lot of it's just getting inspired by other people in the industry that I kind of aspire to be more like, or that I've learned a lot from, or that I admire. So that's been a big part of it. I think I'm pretty transparent. I mean, I'll talk to my boss, I'll talk to our president, I'll talk to our CEO saying, hey, this is where I want to be. This is where I'm trying to get to. And it just kind of not getting, you know, ahead of myself. I've only been doing this 2.5 years, so I can't go too fast. But yeah, I'm pretty transparent. This is kind of how I see my career, and this is where I want to go, and this is what I want to focus on, and just laying it out there so people are on the same page.
But you feel like you've already sold the plan, you think? Or
I think it's pretty sold. I mean, they've given me, I don't want to say total free rein, but they've listened to my opinions when I pushed some of the changes to the shop. They bought into it, and I was kind of the final person that they went to and said, hey, so this is the right decision, this is the thing we should go with. And like, yes, this is what we should go with. So I think I have their trust, and they appreciate my input on things, and they're just kind of getting to a point where I can be out of the weeds enough to really.
I kind of led the witness a little bit, but what I want you to say is, was there a particular strategy? Because like, yeah, you have this roadmap, you feel like the roadmap has been sold to your leadership, which is all just fantastic. And it speaks volume to what you've done as an individual. But for the listeners out there that haven't sold a vision to, like, what's been your, and I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but like, what's a strategy that they can take that says like, how do I convince my leadership of what I think I already know we should do?
Part of it's just, you know, writing it down and mapping it out and making sure that you've kind of thought through it and the pros and cons and the different constraints, risks, et cetera. You know, do a SWOT analysis if there's things that are coming up. But think through it, write it down, and then have those conversations. I mean, I think this is something that is might be undersold in the world of technology, but relationships and building trust and being able to talk to people is a huge part of this role. Like, I don't think being the smartest, most tech savvy person is what puts you into a technology leadership role. It's being able to talk to the stakeholders, to sell things internally, and to get people on the same page and to get people behind you. So biggest thing for me is I talk to our leadership. I have conversations when I go to conferences with them. You know, we grab a beer and we chat, and I brainstorm ideas, and just none of the things kind of on my internal roadmap or the things that I'm thinking about should be total surprises, because I just talk to people about it and I put it out there and I don't keep it a secret. So, you know, write it down, get your thoughts in order. Don't, you know, just throw things haphazardly at people. But I think have the conversations early and let things percolate rather than waiting forever until you have everything perfectly buttoned up and here's my entire business plan. Like, don't surprise people. Have them be part of that conversation. Build
but you hit it there. You hit it there a little bit. You said plan. Yeah. So there is a plan. It's there's not plan. Just ideas, right?
It's no, there's a plan. Like, it's I have like a map in my head and partly written out.
you have to have a little bit of both, right?
You have to have a little bit of both.
Yeah. So, and I think that's where I'll tie it all back to the FreeTO series is we're also here as, you know, Trent, myself, others that have gone through it, right? And have been in other industries, reached those areas. Something that I think is really important to construction right now and for construction companies, sheet metal companies, electrical, GC, everybody. This rapidly changing environment to technologically forward, technologically focused, and technologically enabled through all the different things you hit, including this, you know, sort of accelerant called AI, is critical. And if you don't have someone that's working on the strategy and they're only working in it, you're going to fall behind because you're just not going to be able to keep up. And so that's where you've laid a great framework. And we're trying to push the industry to start looking to take people like you, get them out of the weeds and get a plan to get them out of the weeds in order to look at the future and have time not only to think about, you know, where we are today, but how it might change in the future and how might you create stepping stones and building blocks instead of being one of the ones that's going to, and we've said this on the series a lot, walk right into the wall because you're looking over your shoulder. Looking over your shoulder is working in the day to day. And it's really hard and it's really important to get people like you out there. So I'm excited that we got to sit down and do this. Thank you, Jen, for sitting down with Trent and I and doing an episode. And we're excited this will release on both platforms. And I look forward to seeing you at one of those events soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you guys for having
I'll
me.
I'll see you next week. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah, I don't get to see you next week, but I will see you at MEP Innovations if I don't see you before.
Oh, Jeff, you gotta come to Stratus Innovate one of these years. Come on.
At some point I'll get there. At some point y'all will invite me and I'll get there. But, you know, until that happens, we'll see you out on the road at MEP Innovations, Jen, at least if I don't see you before.
Sounds great.
Trent, thanks a lot. It's been great to sit down with you as always, man. And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our crossover episode and interview with Jen Clark. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and listen to this show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.